We feel this is a momentous occasion in the life of Holden Village. Since yesterday will go down in history as the day that great homers were brought to Holden. And a lot of people sort of wonder why. And many of you here probably are wondering why. You probably feel like the fellow who engaged in a conversation with the statue of Ulysses S. Grant in Washington, D.C. Ulysses S. Grant's statue had been there a long time, and the person had the ability to talk to him and ask him when he came back to life what was the first thing he was going to do. And he said he was going to feed a lot of pigeons. So many people, that's how they regard them. I regard them differently. I had a friend when I was very young who had the homing pigeons, and I admired him. And as some of you know, I'm a birder. I watch birds. And more recently, I've been very much involved in utilizing animals in therapy for people. And I was impressed with two pigeons. One of them was named Orman. And Orman is a checkout piece of equipment in the Park Service in Portland. And it's the most popular checkout item. You can check out all kinds of athletic equipment and everything. But Orman is the most popular, or it was in earlier days. Orman is a disadvantaged pigeon. He's unable to fly. But he's very much a part of the park system, and children especially like to check him out. And Orman likes piano music, and they also have dancers come in, and when they play the piano, he really gets hopped up. And when the dancers come in, he makes up his own dance steps, so he's very, very popular in this regard. The other one, whose name I don't know, he has a French name. When I was at the international meeting in London in January for the Human Companion Animal Bond, there was a veterinarian from France who works with uses animals for handicapped children and disturbed children. And he had a beautiful movie which showed a pigeon, a trained pigeon, with these children, and especially it was focused on one autistic child. And this pigeon, the same pigeon, was the thing that really broke through for them. Certainly in history, the dove or pigeon, which I will use synonymously here, has been the emblem, really, of peace, purity, tenderness, and affection. Although the views on pigeons do differ, I'll give you two of them, eulogies. The first one, their love of society, their affection for their kind, the gentleness of their manners, their chastity, that is to say, the mutual fidelity and undivided love of the male and female, their cleanliness, the care of the person, which argues for the desire to please, the airs and graces, which argue for the same thing, the tender caresses, the gentle cooing, the timid kisses, which become intimate and urgent only as a moment of satisfaction. I have pictures here of pigeons kissing. This is one pleading for a kiss. That would be the female pigeon to the male, and then the female closing her eyes as if kissed. This moment being repeated a few minutes later by new desires of fresh approaches, equally sincere, an ever-enduring flame, a desire forever constant, and what is even better, the power of satisfying it incessantly, no ill temper, no distaste, no quarreling, the whole term of life employed in the service of love and the care of its fruits, all the laborious functions equitably divided, the male loving his mate enough to share them and even to undertake the mother's duties, regularly taking his turn to brood on the eggs and the young. As the truth of the matter is, he takes it usually from 10 to 4 in the daytime, and the mother has it, the female has it the rest of the time. And taking care of the young in order to lighten the labors of his companion, in order to ensure between her and himself that equality on which depends the happiness of every lasting union. What models for man, if only he could imitate them. Now, there's one debunker. The pigeon represents the most sedentary, most home-keeping, most habit-ridden of the bourgeoisie. This is an inveterate loafer, a rake, the neurotomaniac, the slaves of love, the hasten to multiply life as though they were pursued by death. We will not speak of the social virtues of the pigeon. They are almost non-existent. But the doves or pigeons have also been regarded as the emblem of innocence and gentleness. While they must be debunked, they are as ferocious as their strength and their indifferent weapons will permit. The animal, whatever its order, ant, bee, termite, pigeon, man, is a rather foolish creature which lives in a kind of stupor, a sort of cataleptic or semi-vegetable state. Well, you can take your pick. It's probably somewhere in between. At least that's where I'm coming from. Now, unbeknownst to me, many years ago here, Werner considered using homing pigeons. And the time was really not ready for it. And I had been thinking about this in more recent times and thought it would be useful. And any time I can get people who are tied up with birds, it's always a challenge to me. And they are very instructive. And part of our science technology committee, its challenges are to look at new or old methods that might be useful to the program at Holden. And also to educate people, and I thought this would fill the bill. And so what we hope to do with these, and we have now four pair, I hope they're pair, it's hard to tell the boys from the girls. Even experienced ones have difficulty with this unless they have sex-linked characteristics. There are some you can breed so that maybe a black or a red feather showing up in certain crosses is only with one sex. But these are not that way, and sometimes in a blue or a clutch we have two. Sometimes the female is larger than the male, but eventually the male is usually larger with any given breed. The best test is the one that lays the egg, is the female. And if you check this morning, there's already one egg up there, which rather surprised me because they were very disturbed. Two of the pair have already laid two eggs, which is usually where they stop. And hatch them. So what is the plan then? The plan is to keep those here, and don't let them loose because they probably won't stay around because they have a tendency to go to where they were raised. So the ones that will be utilized here to carry messages, which is a long time utilization of them, thousands of years in fact, and I'll give you some examples of that. Is that they can carry messages, and we'll get some practical application to this maybe at the end, or maybe we can do it now. But we probably should, as soon as possible, bring a pair at least down 25 Mile Creek, and as a homing pair there, so you can be exchanging them and carrying them back and forth. So if you want a message back, and. And we've discussed a lot of possibilities. If you go out on a dangerous hike, you can take a couple with you. And if you get into trouble, you can eat one and send one back for help. The one thing that I'm not doing today is giving you a recipe. And we're going to put a lock on it, and the kitchen will not have access to the key. That brings up to mind that there usually are three classifications of the pigeons. And there's almost 200 breeds and varieties. But three classifications usually are the utility of those that are used for squab production. And a squab is a pigeon that's less than, 4 or 5 weeks old. And when you eat them, from there on, they're called squeakers for a while until they mate because they squeak. The actual voice is squeaking. If we have time, we'll get into the voice. In the song, and so that's the squab production. And great homers are included in that because they're quite large. The way up, 25, 30 ounces from. And the fancy breeds are the tumblers, the rollers, and things. And we consider those later because they're great. And I'm interested in them also for utilization in retirement homes where we are placing animals. It'd be very fun for them, not only homing pigeons. But also the rollers and the tumblers, they perform, and they're really fun. And then it's the homing pigeon for which they'll be utilized. And some of you mates, when you separate, you can For example, when John goes out, he can leave. He can take a couple with him and let Mary know how things are going. And they're good for quite a few hundred miles. And they'll go, there are records of them where they'll go 600 miles in a day without stopping. They fly at 40 to 60 miles, up to 60 miles an hour. There are a few where on shorter runs they have gone 60 miles an hour. And they usually go fairly direct. So even today, I think they're utilized in some places, like in London, to get messages like on blood typing and a sample. They can run it from one hospital to another to a lab faster than anything else they got there, which is understandable in a lot of places. And I think it would beat the U.S. Mail. In fact, if I had time, I think I'd go in competition with them and probably do better. And you can, of course, microfilm stuff, so you can get a lot of characters on a package for them. Now, they have been used extensively for a long period of time. It's kind of interesting to do this. I started to tell you. I think eventually, if it works out, you might want to, maybe somebody up at Stehekin, they might want them up the Park Service there, at Lucerne, they might want some. And if the boat company's smart, they could probably increase their business if they had a few on the boat. And the Forest Service, it's been used in Conservation Corps and the Forest Service in earlier days. It's gone to radio now. But there have been remarkable recoveries at sea and other places where they are the only ones that've gotten through. And we can go back in history. And this is about more than you'll ever want to know about the pigeon. It's a book, and it's now into its, I don't know what printing it is. I think this was updated in, it was written in 41, and then in 57 it was updated. I think there's been a recent reprinting in 77, and for $36 or so you can get it. Or better to check it out probably from the local, from the library down in Chelan. I checked this note from Washington State University, and I have to bring it back. I'm always delinquent with them. No, I still got a few days to go. Now, on some readings. Well, some of you should tell me, in biblical, relative to scripture, when it was first utilized. And of course, Noah utilized it. He used a raven too, or a crow. And that was a lost cause. But the pigeon was utilized, wasn't it? It went and came back, and then it released, and it came back with an olive branch, and with the good news, of course, that the water had gone down and receded. It's also in some of the literature, they say that when the pigeon returned, it had some red clay on its feet, and indicating that, that it had been on land, and he prayed that forever the pigeons would have red feet. And yours do. Now, the a lot of famous people were familiar with pigeons and utilized them, and they were. I thought it was interesting on the early Olympic Games in B.C. and early A.D. They'd take them with them to the games, and from their home. And then if they won, they'd paint the pigeon purple and let it go. And then the home folks would know immediately that they had won the game, or won the contest. I could take you through all kinds of early literature relative to this. And I might read you some of this in a little while. Some of the most remarkable feats of those are the disasters on the sea and also in the war. The Germans, this has gone on from the very early times, but in more modern history, in 1800s, the Germans became very keen about pigeons, and Belgium did too. They utilized them in some of the wars in 1800. They reorganized for it in the First World War. And they had organized units to carry messages And whenever they overran an area, which they did in the First World War, they'd take all the pigeons in that area to keep them from being utilized for the enemy. In fact, they destroyed thousands of them. And we got into it too. In fact, we had several famous pigeons that were utilized. I'll give you just a couple of these and the remarkable success they had with them. The most famous one, maybe it was a movie of the Lost Battalion. It was a battalion near the end of World War I that was separated. In fact, it got too far ahead of everybody else and was surrounded by the Germans. And they could not get out. They tried to send messages, they were killed, and they had a number of pigeons. And they sent out the pigeons, and they were hit too. And they watched them take off, and it was a pretty hot firefight going on. And they were all killed, and they were down to one pigeon, and they were, of course, the Lost Battalion was in jeopardy, being itself destroyed, because nobody knew where they were, and they needed help. And they had one pigeon left, whose name was Cher Ami, and they let it go in desperate attempt, and they watched it. It was hit when it was just taking off, and they observed it. But it did make the trip. In fact, it made it at a mile a minute, and it's probably the most famous racing pigeon in history. There was a book written about it, Jeremy, the story of a homing pigeon, and when it landed, fortunately, the leg that had the message on it was just dangling by a couple of sinews, but the message was still on it. The message is just where they were, and the shrapnel or whatever hit it had also penetrated the breast, so it was in bad shape, but made the trip and of course saved the Lost Battalion. So that's one of the more famous ones. They also had Long John Silver. As you might guess, it had lost a leg and still performed, and the Cherami had run many messages up to this time. In the last war, I know we utilized them in North Africa. In fact, General Patton used some to good effect just before we finished in Tunisia. And there was the rather famous one. In fact, it was given a medal by the only medal that had ever been given outside of England. For this kind of feat was given to a pigeon called G.I. Joe. And what had happened, this unit in Italy had these pigeons, including G.I. Joe, who had run a lot of messages. And they wanted the bombers to come and hit this city, and they ordered them up. And then, in the meantime, they broke through and took the city. And, of course, the bombers were warming up. And they let G.I. Joe go, and he made the run 25 miles. 24 miles in 25 minutes or something, and stopped them just in time from bombing. And that was G.I. Joe. They also had one, Julius Caesar, who, as you might suspect, went to Italy, and they dropped him behind lines. They used a lot in behind lines movement. They'd take pigeons with them. They also used it in Burma. And then they'd get their information, and then they'd release the pigeons to go back. In this case, that's what they did. It was very helpful and amazing to the military invasion of Italy, they released the information, and he flew the 300 miles across the Mediterranean to Tunisia. And then there was a Wisconsin boy, you folks from Wisconsin. It was only 12 weeks old, and I bring that out because they can start fairly early. The ones that you have here, if we're successful, should be pretty good at carrying messages by late fall. Yes.
They speculate is the homing pigeon.
Yeah. This book does not go into it. They know that it may be by magnetic fields. We know that, and the sun. They probably go by the sun some, but they also do it in cloudy days. They can go through snowstorms, but they seem to go better faster in sunlight. And I think they get messed up if they take them to the southern hemisphere if they've been racing on the hemisphere. Yes.
Can you tell us about how long it takes for the
dental radiation? Yes. On the procedures here, what we hope is that now we'll have them each paired off here, and we'll have a low nesting box and everything for each pair. And then they'll have an outside little area. And they should lay, hopefully most of them will get paired, you'll have them paired up so that in 10 days or 2 weeks they should be laying eggs. Well, one of them's already laid an egg. And then they'll lay two eggs, and well, first you have to put nesting material in there, pine needles, and you add some nice shavings, you know, cedar shavings, and that stuff is very good. And they're not real good nest builders, but they build a nest. And I was surprised to see an egg there, but what they did is they put it in the feed plate, see? And they took that as a nest. So they'll make the nest, they'll lay the eggs, and that's sort of usually the signal for nesting. You can postpone nesting by not giving any nesting material. And then, all right, so they lay the two eggs, and then they sit on them, and then what you want to do is after about 7 days, you take out the eggs and hold it up to light and candle them to see if you can see large red spot and sort of vessels coming out, and that's a signal that it's fertile egg. If it isn't, you're wasting your time and the pigeons too. And so you remove them, and then they'll lay a couple more eggs. All right, let us say it goes through successfully. Both of those eggs are fertile. So you go out at about 17 to 21 day, 20 days, and then they hatch. And they don't look like much then. And they're called a squab. But they grow very fast. And the mother feeds them with what we call pigeon milk. And I'll describe that in a little while here when I read some of Shakespeare. Shakespeare, incidentally, raised pigeons. And that's why you see a lot of it in his work. But they regurgitate from the crop, and that's how they feed their young. And then in a few days, the young start picking up stuff. And you don't feed them mash. That's bad. You feed them whole grains. And I brought up a 50 pounds of pigeon pellets that are balanced. But I recommend that we mix it with pea greens, and which I brought some pea greens, and also you have wheat here. So those mixture of three. They have to have sand and gravel and some of that stuff, but that's all incorporated in the pellets. All right, so the young start doing that. Well, when the young are about a couple of weeks old, no, about 3 weeks old probably, about 20 or so days, 20, 25, they start, that's why you need a big nest box where you can still have some of the young, but they're getting pretty big now, and they start laying eggs again, they start two eggs, and they don't want anything to do with them after they're about 5 or 6 weeks old. Weaning is 5 weeks, as I recall. And if you take them away, in fact, if you take away the young almost any time, they don't seem to miss them. They do grieve, however, because they're monogamous to an extent, as we discussed last night. In long-term association, some of them appear to grieve for the loss of their mate. But the young doesn't seem to affect them that much. No, the mother. No, the mother. They're about, they're into 150 days before they're, some of them will mate sooner than that and lay eggs. Some of them maybe 3.5 months. Is it already up, huh? They're 4 minutes early. And so the cycle then begins. Now, they'll lay up probably all winter, but you want to take the nest box away when it gets cold and go from there.
And when would the young be able to come back to hold it?
Yeah, well, I think that when they're, I mentioned here 12 weeks is when was trained. Not long, when they're about 5, 6, 7 weeks, then you should let those out a little bit. Just so they get familiar with their surroundings, maybe sit on the garage or something, and then you can, and what you use is bang on the feed them twice a day, And when they're to be fed, you bang on the plate so that they get used to that sound, and so they'll come to feed. And then you can let them out and then bang on it so they'll come back, and then you probably take them down the road a few miles, and then they'll come back, and then you can take them down a little further, and you should be able to run messages from Twenty-Five Mile Creek by maybe October, so if you're lucky, you see. So that's what we're up to here, and I can't read you all this beautiful stuff from the poetry of many ages of many people, but that's last to be chapter 2.
Thank you.